he has some new data, I guess, to share.
So I sent you some graphs about the application trends.
Yeah, I went through them.
So
can we discuss some of those? Because some of them, they aren't very obvious to me. Maybe you can just explain the graphs a little bit.
Okay, let's start with the CAP one.
Okay,
here there is only two benchmarks right now, because I am pending, the two benchmarks are still pending. So one is the CPU benchmark, the C-SPAN CPU benchmark, and another one is the OLTP benchmark. So what I did is that I picked up the maximum value of each benchmark, maximum output value of each benchmark, and divide each output value by the max. That's what I plot on the y-axis, on the x-axis I just increase the CAP. CAP is just the CPU entitlement, as a percentage CPU entitlement. So that's what it is.
So in case of say CPU, how come the output decreases with increase in CAP?
No, because it's the absolute output. So I'm sorry, it's the output with respect to the maximum value, and in the C-SPAN CPU benchmark, actually it reports the output metric is a response time. So as you increase the CAP, your response time actually goes down. So that's actually an improvement.
Oh, I see. So I think that needs to be mentioned here, that it's an improvement. Okay. I was just confused about that
it's confusing sort of. But the thing is that it reports the response time, so the response time goes down as you increase the CAP.
I see. Okay. I think we should put that thing here.
Can we convert this into a throughput value, or so it's more intuitive?
Or we can do the reverse to plot.
Okay. Because you would expect as entitlement increases, the performance to increase, right? So especially if the y-axis is normalized performance.
That's why I said output, I didn't say performance. But I think to compare, because I have also put several graphs, and all those graphs are in transaction per second or throughput, so everything will go up. So only the response time goes down. So probably we need to revert the response time thing.
Okay.
Can we go to the next one? I think next one looks simpler.
Memory.
Yeah, memory, there is no effect on the CPU benchmark. So the only effect you have is on the OLTP benchmark. So in this particular setup, actually, after you increase from 128 megs to 256 range, it goes up a lot. After that, it sort of stabilizes at 384 megabytes and 500 megabytes.
And it seems like 500 MB is roughly the working set of the application. Because after 500, there is no improvement.
It's not even 500, it's less than 384 megs.
But there is an improvement.
Okay.
It's not 384. There is an improvement.
It's nearly 500.
Oh, it's 500, sorry.
Yeah.
500, okay. And the other one, which is Ionize.
Ionize is also, you have no effect on the CPU benchmark, just you have a effect on OLTP benchmark. So is 0 is the higher priority and 7 is the lower priority again. So it's increasing Ionize value, that means that you are actually lowering the priority.
And then how come the highest point is at 0.42? Shouldn't the highest point be 1 if it is normalized?
No, because it's normalized with respect to the maximum output value I got through the entire data collection.
So here you're maintaining some other values constant.
Yeah.
And those values are not the maximum values.
What I did is that I collected data at several combinations. So out of all combination, which one is the maximum, I fixed it and divide all those values by that.
Okay, I mean, I think it would have been slightly better to have one on the y-axis.
Yeah.
So that it's a similar scale, but that's okay. And how about the other, the last one, the CD IOPS?
CD IOPS is also sort of expected as the competition is increasing. The transaction per second of OLTP is going down at a steady pace.
That's a linear.
Not linear in all the ranges. Shape-wise, sort of.
And then it stabilizes around 4,000. I mean, once it goes from 4,000 to 4,500, it seems to be going higher. Is that just the experimental noise, or?
It's just an experimental noise.
So, how many points did you collect data for each point?
Three.
Okay.
And here I also assume that other parameters are not the bottleneck. So, the cap is like 60% CPU entitlement and 512 megabytes of memory.
I see.
And ionize is also higher, zero. So, all the other parameters are at, is not the bottleneck, so only in this case the competing IOPS has.
Can you, what happens if you go beyond 4,500 competing IOPS?
I didn't check it. That.
Okay. Is, but you can achieve more than 4,500?
Yeah.
Competing?
Yeah.
No.
Probably for the sake of graph, I mean, not the data collection, it must be more, it would be, it worth to take as a complete range, right?
Yeah, I mean, if we can see a trend, for instance, if we know for sure that it's actually stabilizing, because we just have one point to determine stability, right? And it would be good to have at least maybe two or three more points, so we can claim stability.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, so couple of comments. One was the inversion of the performance metric for
CPU benchmark.
For the CPU benchmark, and the other is having the maximum value for each line to be one somehow. So the CD IOPS, your fifth CPU will be always at one, I guess, and
you said that the output in this graph should the output start from 1 in those values,
yeah,
just to show that
for
how
these values,
for these values.
So normalized across these values.
Okay.
And I'm wondering how big is the output. It's just the number of bytes.
What happened here?
It's just
a
read.
Hi, Kaushik.
Yes,
thank
you.
Okay.
Huh?
Ajay, are you there? Yeah. Okay. All right. So Kaushik is back with us. So let's continue. Yeah. So those are the two comments.
Okay.
Right. So I think those are easy to fix. So what are the next steps for us for this paper?
So I'm struggling with the accuracy result.
Accuracy of the modeling?
Of the modeling.
Mm-hmm. For these two? For the first two benchmarks?
For the first two benchmarks.
I see.
That's what I said is that the accuracy, is the procedure is not that very straightforward to improve the accuracy. So what I'm doing is I'm trying with different combinations of data to improve the accuracy.
Hmm.
The training set selection.
Training set selection. That's what's making the problem.
I see.
What kind of accuracy issues are you seeing? I mean, are you saying it's hard to reproduce data from run to run, or the overall standard deviation is much higher?
The problem is that thing is that the training set selection plays a lot on your average accuracy, median accuracy, as well as standard deviation. And the problem is that it is because you can get skewed performance. For example, on some range of data, the accuracy values are really good, and for some combinations of data, the accuracy values are all bad. So that's what making the standard deviation and also the median accuracy going higher.
So what that might mean is that you have to have a more formalized training procedure.
Training procedure.
So that you can, we used a sort of a semi-formal training procedure in the previous version of the paper that we formalized for when we wrote the paper. So
yeah.
Maybe you can actually start with that version for your training procedure to make it more formal.
I start with that procedure, but it's not very straightforward to do it.
So in that procedure, we include points and also remove points dynamically based on how the accuracy gets affected by these points, right?
Yeah.
So
thing is that if you try, because it's sort of little bit biased. I mean, if you try with some, because you're trying the accuracy with our testing data,
mm-hmm.
not the training data. I mean,
sure.
Training data, the accuracy is always high.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are training with the same data. You need to try with the data points that are not included in the training set.
Sure.
So thing is that choice of data can also play a big part in reporting the results.
But the way I understand the testing data would be that it's sort of randomly picked, right? Instead of following some sort of procedure for picking the testing data. For training data, you can use a procedure. Right, but for testing data, you should pick random points rather than pick the testing data. That would not be correct. Right. So what I would expect is that you have a testing data set that you have chosen already at random, a bunch of points. And then you can do whatever you want to create your model, pick whatever training data you want, as long as the amount of training data is not huge. And that's okay. So I guess you can sort of tune your training data to improve accuracy for, let's say, the training data or some random testing data. But the testing data, you cannot control, right? So they have to be randomly chosen.
It may be not completely random, but uniform.
Going uniformly, yeah, with your uniform distribution,
right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's why I'm doing it, taking at uniform points,
and that's not working very well.
No, it's that sort of what's happening, because it depends a lot on the training procedure. That what happens is that for some range of data, you're getting very good accuracy, but for some range of data, you're completely messed up.
So, I had a question about the range. So is the data in which you are training the model, that range is different from the data which you are using to do the testing? I mean, are data points lying outside the range?
No. It's all based on the interpolation, not extrapolate.
I see.
My sense is maybe if you are in a linear range, then you don't need multiple data points for training. But when you enter a highly non-linear range, then maybe you don't have enough training points. So if you plot the model in the curve, you may be able to see which part is more linear, which part is more non-linear. The more non-linear part is probably more training points. That's my guess. That may explain why if you use uniform distributed training points, some ranges are good, some ranges are bad. Because of the curve are different.
That's a good point. The other thing which I was going to ask is, are the accuracy numbers that you see now sort of in the same range of accuracy that we had with the previous?
I mean, previous work? One, I tried with a whole bunch of training combinations to come up with the best result.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, but my question is, are the accuracy numbers the same or different?
Accuracy numbers are sort of same.
Okay. So
no, I mean I have to play. Still the accuracy are on the lower side.
So what are the accuracy values we are looking at? Can you give us some?
So right now it's messing up around 15-20%. Error percentage.
So average mean error.
Average error.
That's much higher than what we had before.
Yeah.
And so that was for a different test bed, different machine.
Different machine. Different machine. Also, the training set was a lot different.
Could you use the same training set that you had before to see what happens with this new one?
It's hard. If they collected completely new data set.
Sure, but the training points, can you reuse the same training points?
No, I don't think so, because this is different hardware and software.
I see. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because the memory sizes, your ranges are different and...
Yeah.
And the hardware it is running on is completely different. And if you need to set up a platform-independent model, then we have to take a lot of rather different configuration from the hardware itself.
Yeah. No, I understand. Okay. So could it be that... Do you think the problem is the lack of training data points?
I don't think so. It's just the choice of training data points.
The choice. What if you put all the training data points in there?
All that is collected. Mm-hmm. Then the accuracy will be a lot higher.
So did you try with putting all your training data points in?
Yeah, its accuracy is really good. Like you have only 2%, 3% error.
But the testing data also is part of that?
Testing data also is part of that. That's different. Yeah. But if you put completely separate points, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have to put them completely separate? I mean, is it inconceivable to assume that you have a training data and then when you are running the actual system, as you are applying the algorithm, you are adding new data points into the algorithm. So, whatever data you are collecting online is also being used to train the model.
Yeah, I guess we could think of it that way. But then the question is, you cannot see all the possible testing points. Otherwise, there will be too much data, right? You always will have to make a prediction for some data point, some data points which you haven't seen before.
True. So at that point you make the prediction, and then once you have made the prediction and now you have changed the controls, when you get the new measurement, then you take that into account. Because if there was some non-linearity in that range, that next set of results won't be as good. But the algorithm would have learned from that.
So what you're suggesting is that we have a whole bunch of testing data points, test them one at a time, and improve the model with each testing.
Oh, I think the testing data points that you have, you can use them as it is. But when you're running the algorithm online, where you are getting the measurements and saying, should we change this delta in resource allocation, at that time, the measurement that you collected, you can again use that number.
I think Ajay is talking about that, dynamically adding the data into the model.
We do it online, that would be the way to do it, but actually we are doing offline, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because we are doing it offline, we cannot use the KPI.
If you put all the data and then get to the result 2%, 2-3%, very small, then I will say, probably your ranges are much higher than the previous past ranges, and that's why you need to collect more data points to make it correct, probably.
Kaushik, can you repeat that? You didn't get it.
I'm saying that because I heard Soji was saying that if he puts all the data into the training point, as a training point, then he's getting 2% accuracy. Now,
that may indicate that the data that he has collected is not enough. And that may be because of the range of the memory, the range of the CPU is much higher than the ranges that we had in the HPC submission.
Yeah, that's true. HPC submission, we just tried between 5% to 20% CPU entitlement. And also the memory was sort of close to 256 to 512 megs. So it, the range was really short in the HPC paper.
The size of the 20 high is the same?
No, it's all, I've collected more data also. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Sajib, when you run the experiment, you should be able to see what range the values are going in. So for any application, if you have collected the range of, let's say, in this case, 10 to 60% CPU cap, then if you are assigning 70% CPU to the application, you would know that you are going outside the range. So is it possible to test?
I don't think he's going outside the boundary, but within the range, I think the number of data that he's collecting is not adequate to cover all the range.
So Ajay, I think there is some maybe misunderstanding. Sajib is not talking about accuracy of the dynamic resource allocation yet, if I understand
yes.
correctly. He's just talking about the accuracy of the model as in 5.1, right, the statically constructed model.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, so we still have a long way to go. Before we start getting the dynamic resource allocation accuracy data. So right now it's what we did for the HPCA paper, we are trying to reproduce that for this new platform. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I think basically it's just taking the some data, train the model, take the rest of the data and do the prediction.
Yes. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So
sorry, I
was suggesting for the range that the accuracy is not as bad, you increase the number of data points from there, and you can add more training points. It's just for the range that the result is bad. You still do it uniformly, but just reduce the gap or the step.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have more data points from there.
So how many training and testing points you have right now on an average for these benchmarks?
Training I have, depends, for CPU I have 136, for OLTP I have more than 200 data points.
Mm-hmm.
And testing probably around 50 points.
Okay.
How much?
50 points.
50.
So the training points are the majority, and then maybe 2/3 are training and 1/3 is testing or something like that.
Something like that.
And the training data and the testing data have similarity? Like if there's like, I don't know how, what, say for example, if you're taking the CPU from 10 to 60
Okay, so I'll give you a simple example about the CPU benchmark. So I have, because in CPU benchmark, I have only the CPU parameter that's affecting, the cap parameter. So what I have in the training data, I have results for cap 10, 20, 40, and 60, and I have tried with and the testing data has cap of 30 and 50.
Mm-hmm. 10, 20, 40 and 60.
40 and 60 in the training data and 30 and 50 is on the testing data.
I think what is going on is you're having too much gap, because I think 0 to 10, 10, 20, 20 to 40 is too much gap. And it may be difficult to model within that gap without a data within that point. And do you remember what kind of CPU data you had in the HPC CPU paper?
HPC paper CPU data is different. Is I had the data between 5 to 20, and I tried with combinations of 8, 15, and 20, some 20 values.
5 to 20 at what gap?
5 gap. 5, 10, and 20, I remember.
Okay. I think the gap is a little bit higher, probably. That's right, probably. So probably if you take a data more data points, then probably it will solve the problem.
So this accuracy problem you're having both with CPU and with OLTP benchmarks?
I'm trying with the CPU only because CPU is the simplest one.
Mm-hmm.
OLTP, I collected the data and separated out, but not trying to, because what I found, I tried with the going with the from the simple to her more complex benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, for Sysbench CPU benchmark, because in artificial neural network there are several activation functions for Sysbench CPU, as because the output is linear with the cap, the fan linear function is giving better accuracy than the sig model function.
I see. Which is odd because we had sig model doing better in the previous version of the paper, right?
In the CPU experiment.
ICCA.
Because the CPU experiment in that benchmark it's not linear. You have dependencies of other parameters as well. You have dependencies of CDIOPS, ionize. Here it's just more flat. It's just the only parameter that's affecting is CPU. So it's completely linear function actually. If you take the data, if you look at, because I looked at the data, it's completely linear. I mean, if you increase from 10 to 20, your response time decreases by half. If you go from 20 to 40, again decrease by another half.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely linear function.
If you revert that and make it throughput, then it'll be actual linear, because this is more of a sublinear curve, right? Because sort of exponentially decreasing, something like that. I don't know. Or no.
It's the same linear curve.
Because you saw that it's not.
It says the slope is negative. That's it.
Yeah, but if you look at the graph, it's not.
Yeah.
This one? It's not linear. Because if it were linear, then you can probably easily interpolate and get good accuracy.
This media should be very linear.
It should be like this, right?
Yeah.
Do you know which part is giving you high error?
I think the testing points are 50. 30 and 50, right?
50, yeah. 50, in the 50 range, it's giving high error.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It's not linear, but the values are linear.
See this, when you go from 10 to 20, it's exactly half of what it was, right? So 1 to 0.5.
Yeah, and you go
and when
from
you
were
20
to 40, let's say.
20 to 40.
It's almost linear.
Yeah.
Almost half.
Yeah, but this is not a linear behavior. If you convert this into a transactions per second, then that would be linear function.
Oh, okay.
So you might have a better accuracy with the other output metric.
Yeah, I think this is basically if cap is denoted as x, this is going as 1 over x.
1 over x, exactly.
Whereas the other one would be linear function because it will be inverse of 1 over x.
Correct.
It will go as 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. But still, I mean, even for this metric, we should be able to do the prediction, right?
Yeah.
Because we apparently have this really complex and powerful modeling tool, which should be able to catch.
It should be able to catch.
Yeah.
You are saying that for this one, media is better than sigma.
The activation function, linear activation is getting better accuracy.
Because that's stepwise linear, perhaps. Is that stepwise linear or just?
It's probably inside ANN, it's stepwise linear.
Mm.
Because ANN doesn't plot like a normal linear regression.
Mm-hmm.
I thought we used this called Elliott before, right?
Elliott.
That was the same as sigma?
Yeah.
It's sigma itself. It's a different version of sigma.
Yeah, but this seems fairly simple to model, right?
It's,
I mean,
very simple.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's surprising that the tool is not able to do this. So you're missing 30 and 50 in your training data?
Yeah. I have higher very good accuracy in the half inch. But I have really bad accuracy in the 50
inch. And you have 60 also, right?
60 also in the training.
Absolutely right.
Which points are training? 10, 20, 40 and 60. And 30 or 50 are the testing.
I need to look at this.
You think this gap?
Yeah.
Maxima?
From 20 to 40, you have 20 points, right? Between 20 and 40. And you need to estimate
30. So the question really is how many points of training points are reasonable to assume or as realistic, right? So if we have, let's say, increments of 10 from 0 to, well, 0 doesn't make sense, but 10 to 60, that those are 5 points. For CPU. And then how many do we have for memory?
Memory I am taking as 128, more or less 120 megabytes granularity.
So that's probably around 8 points, right, for a 1 gig memory. And then you have Ionize.
I'm taking only 3 values.
And completing IOPS.
Again, 3 values.
Completing IOPS, you might have problems there also, right? You might need more than... Because
maybe
if you look
for,
at...
Maybe not for this benchmark. But
maybe not for... Yeah, but you might need it for the ionized... the CDIOPS trends. Maybe. I don't know. So 5 times 3 times 8 times... I don't know how many CDIOPS points we need.
Let's say 4.
It's about... 500 points?
480.
Yeah.
480 points.
So 500 training points, how much time to train each?
Oh, it's a lot. For OLTP, it's a lot. So I think we are doing the wrong approach of getting the results. Probably instead of taking the whole output as it finishes, it's better to take instantaneous results and just put it. In that way, it will be really faster.
Okay, so...
How long are you running it?
One OLTP experiment is typically 15 minutes.
Can make it
15, 1-5?
Yeah.
Can make it shorter?
I mean, that seems reasonable. I mean, how low will you go? Going very low would be also very dangerous because there would be a lot of instantaneous values which won't make sense. You can probably still go to a 5 or 10 minute average, but going anything lower I think would be too risky.
The other thing that you can think of is, can you incorporate the training and getting the data in your algorithm itself. In that way, wherever the algorithm, whatever performance, whatever conditions the algorithm is running, the system is running, you will get the data nearby to that point.
So, Kaushik, in other words, you're suggesting, okay, as you train, you also test, and then you refine your training data set online.
Yeah, because he will do the thing during the, he will run the thing and then run the algorithm, get a new allocation, then put the allocation, then get a new performance value. Now, whatever performance value he gets, he put this back into a training system, train the model, then use that for the future prediction. So, in that way, the training model will give you the model will give you the prediction for the delta increment only. And in that way, you may have a better accuracy also.
Yeah.
And Sajeev, how are you running these experiments? You run 15 minutes, then you stop, you collect the data, and then you start again?
Yeah.
Is that how you're running?
It's sort of that. After clearing the cache, and run it again, yeah.
Oh, but in terms of, for example, CPU cap, can't you run a single experiment where after every 10 minutes you increase the value of the cap and then get that measurement? I mean, do you have to run the experiment, start and stop, start and stop? You can just run OLTP for 1 hour and collect a lot of data points within that 1 hour.
Yeah, I could certainly do that. There is no problem of getting stopped, I guess.
I think the reason you decided to have multiple executions of OLTP was to simplify scripting, or
scripting is not that right thing.
I mean, I would assume it would be easier to get the data by not stopping the run. Experiment would keep on going, and then the script can just modify the values.
If we can make OLTP give us performance data online.
Yeah, it reports.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's possible, I guess. But we still need a lot of data points, even with data points.
I don't know why the retraining errors are giving it to this.
I mean, the nice thing about that is you run the benchmark, and then every 2 minutes you change the value.
Hmm.
And then you basically take the periodic measurements. So even after running for 2 hours, you have a lot of measurements to use in the algorithm.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So it's like you would be able to get 500 measurements within a day.
Hmm.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that if you run it for 1 hour, all the data points are independent of each other or not.
But if you think about an online setting where we are actually doing the dynamic resource management, that's what we'll do, right?
Yeah, but that is not exactly what we are doing now.
No, but I mean, in the end, we want to use the model for that purpose.
I know. But then the whole product should be redesigned somehow. Right now, we are doing our application from start to end, and then we try to predict the runtime. Right. So the other way is different, because you assume that the application is constantly running. There's no start and the end. You take performance measurement periodically, and then you predict performance of next period. Right? That will be different from, and it's very different from the HPC.
Yeah, I think that our direction for this paper is more broad
mm-hmm.
and going towards online
than
what we had in the HPC paper, which was really not as much about dynamic resource management
right.
at all. It was
right.
just performance modeling for applications that run in virtual machines. And in that work, we decided to use performance metrics at the end of the execution. But I think the online changes is more in tune with where we want to go with this paper. So, and the other comment that I had was, whether the performance measurement that you see in a 2 minute interval is the same as in a 15 minute interval really depends on the stability of the application.
Right.
So the application is doing the same thing for 15 minutes or similar things. And the really atomic granularity is much smaller than that, where it keeps repeating similar things. Then whatever you see in 2 minutes is probably going to be representative of what you see in 15 minutes.
Right, that has to be part of the assumption if we go that route.
Yeah.
We are assuming that the application doesn't change its behavior so often, or at least much longer than the time we take to train our data, train our model.
Yeah, I mean, thinking into the future, what we want to achieve is that applications that do change their behavior.
Right.
And so we observe what happens in the 2 minute interval or maybe 5 minute interval.
Mm-hmm.
And see, okay, well, the latest observation is not in tune with what we observed in the past, so we need to retrain our model. And so there is this notion of dynamically updating the model.
That is fine. I'm just saying that actually this is more like what I have been doing using fuzzy modeling, just now we, here we are using ANN. That is fine, just we have to change the assumption, we have to make it clear. What we have, we do it before, it's totally different. We are kind of, we are trying to predict performance of batch application. Then now we are shifting towards performance prediction, research modeling for online applications. So the assumptions, the online assumptions are different. It's fine, either way it's fine, we have to be clear about it. And the whole thing has to be online, the whole thing has to be adaptive. Okay. This is gonna be, so you have to do the training online, you have to retrain, just at the point that you have to retrain adaptively.
Right. For this paper though, I mean, we really, it's not realistic for us to do the online model training.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about, well, given some resource allocation,
mm-hmm.
We want to come up with a technique that
mm-hmm.
will alter the resource allocation in an incremental fashion so that we converge to the optimal resource
right.
allocation
right.
eventually.
Right.
Right. So I see it as a step, one of the steps towards getting to the, like, the actual solution for the online problem, online version of the problem.
If that would not be the focus of this paper, right?
At least, it doesn't seem realistic for us at this point.
So I think it may be better to stay away from that, instead of mixing these two together in the same paper. The previous approach is more like a profiling approach. You have a bunch of profiles, and then you predict the performance for resource allocation that is not already in the profile.
Yeah.
And the new approach is more like the online modeling, online prediction approach.
Right. I mean, it's not, I don't see too much of a disparity here between these two approaches if application is stable. Right? If OLTP is stable, if OLTP tells me that if you take 2-minute granularity and get performance, you will get the same number if you wait for 15 minutes, right? And I think Ajay is coming from, if I'm not mistaken, is saying that, well, 2 minutes may be representative instead of waiting for 15 minutes if we can make OLTP give us online information about performance, right?
Yeah, I mean, we can change the interval based on what Sajib observed. If Sajib thinks that based on the experimentation, the interval should be 3 or 4 minutes, we can take that. Or we can skip a reading in between. Let's say we are collecting periodic data every 2 minutes. Then once you change the value, you skip the next reading, and then you take the next 2-minute reading. So
right.
those things you can go around, and depending on how consistent the results are.
Yeah. I guess the reason we are having this discussion is because of the model accuracy, right? It seems like we cannot get good accuracy with the number of points that we are able to collect right now. So how do we bump it up? How do we collect more data within a much shorter period of time?
Much shorter period of time.
So that we can do better predictions.
Yeah.
And without those, without the good prediction accuracy, the online changes really will not be accurate either. So
yeah.
we need to find a conclusive solution for getting better accuracy. And I think this is a reasonable one. I think if we have stability in the application behavior, we should reduce the time granularity for collecting.
Data is not sure that OLTP is stable.
Hmm.
If you run for 1 hour, the performance is equivalent to running, you know, 6 times 10 minutes. I'm not sure that is stable.
It might be a good idea to run that, you know, one pilot to see if that statement, you know, if the stability exists or not. Because if it doesn't, then we might have to think about something else. Can we also change the total execution time of OLTP?
Maybe you can reduce the size of the database.
That's the only way.
Yeah, I think it's doable. Either way.
The way I'm doing it is just, what you could do in the Sysbench OLTP, I remember, is you have mostly the two parameters. One is the database size, how large is your database, and another is how many number of complete transactions are you making.
Yeah.
So the way you can size up the or vary the execution time is by changing the mostly by changing the number of transactions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the reason we went with 15 minutes was.
It's not 15 minutes, I'm saying in average. So it could be 5 minutes, it could be 30 minutes, depending on the allocation.
Oh, resource allocation.
Depending on the resource allocation to finish the same experiment.
I see. That's a good point. I think there is one issue, which is that for different data points, you want to have similar application behavior. And that's one reason for why we chose to execute the application completely.
Yeah.
If we take time as the invariant across these different resource allocation levels, then we might have different behaviors.
Yeah.
At low resource allocation, the application might not do a representative set of operations.
Mm-hmm.
In a short period of time. Yeah, so I guess the question really might be then, what should be that invariant? Should it be the total behavior of the application or time or something else? And I think earlier we used total behavior of the application. Which is certainly reasonable.
There are batch applications that are important. Even within a single RAM, it may change its behavior, but the total RAM, that is environment. That captures the important category of the application.
Mm-hmm.
If we go the other route, we have to make a different assumption. We have to assume that in a short period of time, it doesn't change its behavior, which may not hold for the first category of an application. So both are important,
the
different types.
Okay, that's a good point, mate. Yeah, so Ajay, do you have any comments about that?
I mean, I think I like the idea of running a trial run and then changing parameters and then seeing how stable the measurements are.
Yeah.
And if that works, I think we should just follow that model and there is no reason to feel shy about collecting more data, because I think once we say that we are collecting training data to train the model, the fact that there are 5 points versus 7 points, I don't think it makes a difference.
Yeah, I agree.
It's better to collect more data and then show that the modeling works, because I think the high level point is even showing that some machine learning technique can be made to work based on enough training data is a big deal in itself.
Yeah. Okay.
The other point that I was thinking is that by looking at the graphs that you have sent, I can see that not in all the ranges not all the applications behavior change. So for the application for which the behavior doesn't change that much in a particular value, we don't need to collect more data.
That's the exact procedure I'm employing.
Okay.
True. No, I think that's a good point. Once you see consistent behavior, you don't have to have the same interval.
Let's say for CPU there is no effect of memory and ionize that much. But OLTP, there is an effect. So what I'm doing is that for CPU, I'm taking fewer data points with memory. But in OLTP, I'm taking more data points with memory. That's the thing I'm doing.
And also, you can take fewer data points, but in the system, you can put more data points just extrapolating from the existing data.
Yeah, in the training, yeah.
Yeah, so I think it should help. In terms of memory in megabytes, can you change that also on the fly? Other three, I think you can. How about memory?
Yeah, you can change on the fly.
I see. Okay, so you can add and remove memory from a VM easily.
Easily, yeah.
Okay, so I think all four you can change on the fly, then there is no reason to run the experiment again. You should just run it once and the script would change parameters periodically.
Thing though is about memory. How does that work though? I mean,
It's a separate driver. It's a separate balloon driver that's cooperating with the VMs.
Balloon driver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the balloon driver will release the memory, and then there would be fewer page faults. In memory, the thing is you should make the interval a little longer, because CPU is very easy to allocate as soon as you have it.
Yeah.
Memory is a special resource, and it takes some time for you to accumulate newer
allocation
of pages.
Newer allocation, yeah, that's true.
So you should allow longer time in memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you're, so how about your current change in memory? How are you changing that?
So you're done with the one specific run of the application.
Uh-huh.
Then you pass a command to change the memory.
Right.
After the command executed,
uh-huh.
Finished, you start the application.
You don't change the memory size inside of the virtual machine. That is possible.
Sorry?
The memory size inside of the virtual machine.
Yeah.
As part of the configuration file, you change it back to one.
Yeah, I change the memory inside the virtual machine.
You change the configuration file, or how do you change it back?
You can change it from the outside with the XMM set command. It's very easy.
But that's still dynamic changes.
That's dynamically changes because I checked it. It affects. I mean, if it, just to apply within a few moments, you do a crop inside the virtual machine to see the memory location.
Yeah, yeah.
You can confirm.
You don't have to restart the virtual machine.
No.
Okay. But I think Ajay's point was that although it might the physical memory for the VM is virtualized, right? So it might have the view of having, let's say, increased from 256 to 512 megabytes. But if I'm understanding Ajay correctly, there might be some duration of time where you don't yet have 512 megabytes of physical memory available.
Yeah, I mean, even if you assign it 512, if you are doing it on the fly, it would take some time for the VM to fill in 512 megabytes and then start using it. So we should do the measurement once it has filled in and it is benefiting from all that. Because as soon as you increase, the OS is not going to give extra pages right away. It's going to give extra pages as and when you page fault.
Hmm. Well, actually, the OS doesn't page fault. This becomes like a hypervisor fault, right? Because the OS supposed to see the memory.
True, OS would see the memory, but since it was 256 before, it was working within 256. And then as it gets more and more pages, now it would start using 512. But by the time it starts using 512, it would be some time lag.
Hmm.
I mean, in that interval, there would be faults because earlier it was only using half of the memory.
Does that make sense to you?
I don't know, but OS, as soon as you increase the memory size from 256 to 512,
uh-huh.
You do a top and you inside the virtual machine, you could easily see that your memory is increased from 500 to 512.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah.
I think that is fine, but do you see how much of it is occupied versus empty? Is 512 occupied right away, or at that time the occupancy is 256 and over time it would become 512?
Occupancy is different metric. I don't think my application uses the whole memory. I don't think so.
When you do a top, you'll see the percentage utilization of memory, including how much your application uses in plus how much the OS uses to store file pages and things like that. So if you have 256 and you see 100% utilization, that means that all of 256 is currently being used. If you move to 512, yes, you see physical memory as 512, but how much of it is immediately used? My guess would be 256, right? Because you need to fill in all those extra pages that you just got. And how you fill those in would be, well, actually, I don't know if those get filled in immediately or not. Maybe there is a way to fill those in immediately. But
I mean, it would take some page faults and everything, because earlier it was 256, and now when more pages are coming, if the working set is more than 256, it should fill it up pretty quickly.
Right. So I guess the question is, when the application is restarted, then it should fill in that, right? But if you do it in an online fashion, maybe not. Because if you just change the memory while the application is executing, then maybe the initial few seconds that it takes to fill in the additional 256 megabytes, you don't see the benefit of those additional 256 megabytes.
Exactly. And I think that's why I'm saying that you should not take a reading within next 1 minute or so, and then even if you take the reading, ignore the next first reading.
Yeah.
And then later on you would start seeing the benefit of that memory.
On the other hand, if we had to restart the application, then you would see all the memory at the beginning of the execution of the application. So it might be safer for us to restart the application and just make the duration of the applications shorter than 15 minutes.
That would be much easier, I think.
15 minutes is actually hard to control in that case, the time, if you are not taking dynamic collection. Because as I said, it depends a lot on your allocation. If you're on some allocation, it could be like 2 minutes, the application could finish. But for some allocation, it could go beyond 20 minutes, 20 seconds.
How much time does the other background take?
See, spend CPU is the same. I mean, if your cap is lower, it takes a lot of time.
What is the ballpark number? How long does it take?
It's kind of in the same range, 10, 15 minutes.
Also 15 minutes? So you have to do this for all the benchmarks?
I have this. Except for the memory benchmark, if the memory is high, it's really short.
I think it's safe, but it's easier to make it run shorter.
Yeah, I don't think we have a choice at this point. Given our time constraints, we don't have the luxury of running 15-minute experiments.
No, we have to
really change that. Average time, more like 3 to 5 minutes is what we can afford.
But then we have to give up all the opportunities we already have. Which idea?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's true. Yeah, it might also be good to just understand the stability of OLTP. To see what you get if you run for 2 minutes versus 15 minutes
for the same application, for the same configuration of the application.
Yeah.
Because in the application you can report at 2 minutes interval.
Yeah. I think you should try at least that you get the reporting every 2 minutes. And then you note the time interval when you are changing these parameters, either CPU or memory or I/O. And then based on that, just collect the whole range by using the 2 minute interval samples. And then just discard some samples because they were in that transition period when you were changing a resource. And I think that you might still be able to get a very reasonable curve without restarting.
Yeah, except for something like memory, you have to be more careful in how you collect data.
True, I guess for memory, just maybe drop 2 samples instead of 1 sample.
Yeah.
But I don't think it will take more than 4 minutes to really catch up on memory if the working set is really bigger than your current mem size.
Okay.
And you can look at other statistics also. I mean, when you run the experiment, you should be collecting the full top statistics so that you can also look at how many page faults were happening, or you can look at what was the swap usage for the host, and then you can relate that once the working set starts fitting in, there was no swapping going on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, I mean, do not feel shy about collecting data. While you are collecting, just collect as much as you can. And I believe you can run ZenTop in some batch mode where it would just collect data and put it in some file
That's what I'm doing. But with ZenTop, I don't think you can get the swap data. You need to be inside the virtual machine to get the swapping.
I mean, you should be able to get the host level swapping. But I guess in this case, the host level swapping may not exist. So usually if you overcommit the overall memory on host, there is host level swapping, and then there is obviously the guest level swapping that the host won't give you. You have to collect inside the guest.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that you need to be inside the guest.
So the guest level swapping, that's not part of the input, right?
It's not part of the input, but I guess Ajay's point is that to understand why the performance
behaving in that
way. Yeah,
okay.
we can explain it using some auxiliary data, such as whether or not swapping is going on, and whether or not working set is fitting in memory and things like that.
Because I believe we will see data points which would require further explanation, and then by looking at this extra data, we would know what to say.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be used even to give us more confidence.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, I think so. Sajib, you're collecting all the output of top, or just
no top? I'm not getting any data from the inside the virtual machine.
But using ZenTop,
using ZenTop, I'm only collecting the data I need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, if space is not an issue,
space is not the issue. I'm talking. I think, but with ZenTop, you cannot get the memory utilization or swapping. You have to be inside the virtual machine.
That's a good point.
No, but it will give you host-level memory utilization, host-level swapping.
No. In ZenTop, it doesn't give the host-level. It just gives you the memory allocation. It doesn't give you the utilization.
The host, I guess what you mean is just top? Like, plain top inside the host, like DOM 0 or something like that?
I mean, I would assume, I haven't used ZenTop in a while, but I would assume when you run it, it will tell you overall the host memory, how much of it is allocated, how much of it is free, if swapping is going on, what's the swap rate and all that.
No, it doesn't.
For the host.
It doesn't give you?
No.
Maybe just some configuration flags that to get more information out of ZenTop. The default may not give you, but...
Yeah, true. Top usually takes a conf file. I don't know how ZenTop works, but for example, ESX top, it takes a configuration file in which you can ask it to collect everything or very specific things, and you can specify in that file.
Hmm. Also, I mean, command line options exist for top that will give you additional information. So you can control what it gives.
That's the same for ZenTop. You have some command line options.
Yeah, so you might want to check the command line options to see if you can get
this. But there is no swapping, I'm sure.
No? No. What about host memory utilization?
Utilization? No, not yet, no.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do the top inside the virtual machine to get the
statistics. Okay, well, we cannot.
Okay, and then did you get a chance to look at that, getting the IO latencies?
No, not yet. Too struggling with the accuracy right now.
I see. Okay, that's fine. I was just curious.
Okay, so, I mean, regarding the paper, I think we are really, really short on time right now. Right. So Sajib, what are your...
I mean, at this point, I'm just trying to have this ready.
Okay. I mean, the backup, if we don't make it to OSDI, of course, is...
I mean, just think of the OSDI right now. I don't want to think about the
that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah.
It's work. Otherwise,
we'll just keep up.
Yeah, let's shoot for OSDI. I hope we can make it. And okay, let's not talk about the backup. Okay, that's fine.
Okay. The point is, Sajib, if your machine is sitting idle for a minute, that's the loss. Your machine should be continuously on.
I'm sorry.
It'll
be running 24 hours.
You can go to sleep, but the machine should not sleep.
Yeah. Okay, so, I mean, we also need to think about writing tasks. So maybe we can coordinate that over email. I need to go soon. So, I think we had the workshop paper, which has most of the structure for what we have in mind. If you have some additional input for how we can improve the content or the structure of the paper, that certainly would be useful. But at this point, it seems like the structure is going to be very similar to what we had written for the workshop. I think what needs to perhaps change is the description of the algorithm, to be more sort of a textual description than the way we formalized it within an algorithm for the workshop paper. Because I think it's that format is not very suitable for an OSTI submission. Other than that, do you have any suggestions for improving the structure of the paper?
I think I'll have to look at the current structure. There was an outline that you sent out last week.
Yeah, I think that's where it stands even now. There is not been changes on that front.
No, I mean, what you can do is just compare, because I have the same outline in the workshop paper also.
Okay.
So you can compare what you can put from or borrow from the workshop to the OSTI.
Okay.
I see. And then in terms of writing, is it possible to set some SVN or some repository that I can log into? It would be a little cumbersome to exchange emails and then update everyone with files and things like that.
Sorry, I was meaning to set that up already. We have an SVN server that we all use, so I just need to create an account for you and get you set up with that. So I'll do that maybe later today.
Okay. I think that
would
be a good idea.
Okay. All right. And we can coordinate some writing tasks over email during this week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. So I think that's it for today. And maybe you want to meet sometime later during this week or directly next Monday?
I can meet with you personally.
Okay,
and
we can.
We can update over the email.
Okay, so I'll meet with Sajib offline and we'll update you guys.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, feel free to send frequent email. That's always a good idea.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
Okay. Okay,
all right. Bye.
Bye.
See you, Sajib. What happened to your hand?
There are some weak pains that are going on for more than a month.
Too much typing?
I don't know how I got it. Probably like twisted somehow.
Twisted because of some sport or something, or because of typing?
I just don't know. I was feeling some uneasiness in the week.
I hope you don't put your wrist on the test. Because then you should not. I mean, you should get one of these things.
I do like this.
Yeah, because that can sometimes cause problems. The ideal posture for typing, of course, is that you don't touch anything, but your hand, your whole arm gets very because of that. So that's why I got these.
Okay.
Because if you have nerves on the other side of your palm. You know that, right? So
I mean, it's not hurting anyone. Just you're trying to do something or bend it, it's hurting.
Yeah, because those, I think this, your nerves have probably got bruised internally.
Okay.
Because of too much pressure. So you should get one of these.
But this one is helping, actually.
Okay, yeah. That's like this, right? I mean, because instead of that, you have a bandage.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you cannot keep that on always.
This is one kind of thing I thought, because in other places, the injury gets healed very easily.
Uh-huh.
This is something, because
it's not easy. No, I've had that. I mean, I've had days when this would ache, and then it would go away. But that would typically be because I'm doing this.
Okay.
And then one hand... Sometimes one hand aches, sometimes the other one. It depends on which one is bruised more. And then it would heal automatically, but you have to be more careful. Okay?
Okay.
All right, see you.
Thank you.